Chapter 28. Petra opened her eyes to dimness and rubbed them. Had she dreamt it all? Was she still in some inn bedroom? No. Pleated silk lined the canopy above her bed, and when she sat up she saw the pretty room to which the Marquis of Hrothgar had brought her. Someone had drawn the thick curtains, that was all, cutting the light, but chinks at either side showed it was still daylight outside. How could she have simply gone to bed? What sort of behaviour was that? She climbed out of bed and saw a glass pitcher of water, which made her aware of how thirsty she was. She poured and drank, then did so again until the jug was empty. That prompted another need. There was no chamber pot beneath the bed, but she found a privy chair behind a silk screen and used it. There was no washing water on the stand, however, and she was still dirty. She blushed to see her feet had left smears of dirt on the pristine sheets. Then she noticed that her clothing was gone. She remembered shedding it and letting it lie where it fell and winced. Now some servant knew that the Marquis's bastard daughter was a slut. This was not the entrance she'd hoped to make. If she'd stayed with Lady Sodworth, she would probably have arrived here in her habit. It wouldn't have been particularly clean, but there would have been some dignity in that. Except that the English disliked papists. She shook her head at the memory of leaving her cross and rosary in Robin's pocket. What use could they be to him? Robert Cockcroft, she reminded herself. Sober man of Cornwall. She raised the curtains to let in light, but still didn't see her clothing. A brown robe lay over a chair, however, so she stripped off her threadbare shift and put that on, then went to the fireplace and resolutely tugged the pull. That was when she saw a folded sheet of paper on the mantelpiece with Petra written on it. She reached for it, but then saw it lay beside the cameo brooch, her prayer book, and some coins, the simple contents of her pockets. What had a servant made of them? She touched the raised design of a robin, wondering if it would betray him, but surely that was far-fetched. To anyone else, it would merely be a bird. She picked up the letter, knowing it had to be from her father before she saw the seal, with its clear impression of an R. R for Hrothgar. R for Robin. Had the design on Robin's ring been an R? She shook that away. A seal would not be a person's first name. She unfolded the sheet of heavy paper, remembering the poor stuff she'd used in Speenhurst. Robin should have received that yesterday. Had he done as requested and given up his search? Clear, straight writing like Robin's, but forming darker lines. My dear daughter, on fete day, the family eats in the evening and informally, as the household has been busy all day. If you feel able to join us at 6:30, we will be delighted, but if you prefer to spend the evening quietly in your room, we will hear your adventures tomorrow. Remember, you are to command anything you desire. Some garments have been provided, which we hope will suffice for now. It was signed simply Hrothgar. Petra read it through again, seeking some deeper understanding. It was somewhat formal, but this was a situation without social guidelines. 6:30. She looked around, but there was no clock. The prayer book contained her evidence, the picture of an eye, and the letter from her mother. It seemed they might not be needed, but she took the book, looking around for something with which to cut out the pieces of paper. There was a knock on the door. Petra had only just put the prayer book back in place when a maid entered and curtsied. "What time is it?" Petra asked. "Nearly 6 of the evening, miss." She had the rosy cheeks and robust look of the gainers, but blonde hair showed at the front of a neat frilled cap. Petra felt her own head. Her mob cap was gone, exposing her short hair, Perhaps that was why the maid looked curious. "Miss," she'd said. What name had the servants been given? She'd look mad for asking. "I need to wash and change," she said hesitantly. Despite the Marquis's note, she was unsure of her privileges. "Bathe, if possible." That might be too great an imposition at short notice. "Yes, miss." "Quickly." "Yes, miss." The maid curtsied again and left. Petra threw up her hands. She should have said she must be ready in half an hour. What was the matter with her? She'd been raised with servants to provide every want, so why not make clear demands here? The maid returned very quickly, entering through a side door Petra hadn't noticed, because it blended with the white-panelled walls. "Your bath's ready, miss."
"Already?"
"Yes, miss."
"Your name?"
Petra asked.
"Susanna, miss."
"Then take me to my bath, Susanna."
"In here, miss."
"Next door is a bathing room."
"Your dressing room, miss."
Petra entered a small chamber easily warmed by a fire and containing a clothes press and two chests of drawers. The bath sat in the centre, but it was not a tub to be carried in for the occasion, but a piece of furniture in a glossy wooden box. Steam rose from it, and Petra asked, "How is this done so fast?"
"There's always hot water, miss, and the Marquis devised a way to feed it to the dressing rooms."
Petra was astonished, but didn't hesitate in shedding her robe and climbing up the steps. When she eased down into the just-right water, she sighed with pleasure.
"This is lovely."
Then she realized she said it in Italian. Ah, well, the maid probably understood the meaning. The inside of the bath was decorated with painted flowers, but as Petra scrubbed away days of travel, they were soon clouded by dirty water. As in Montreuil. Don't think about Montreuil. Robin bathing nearby. She'd imagined his naked body. Later she'd been his lover, but all she remembered was taut muscles, intense life and blinding pleasure. Oh, God, don't remember that pleasure.
"Are you cold, miss? Do you want me to draw more hot?"
Had she shivered?
"No. No, thank you. But I must hurry. Wash my hair, please. It's short and doesn't take long to dry."
Don't remember. Don't remember anything. Robert Cockcroft, quiet man of Cornwall. Petra soon rose to step into the towel the maid held. She would think of this bath as a baptism, a transition into a new life, the new life her mother had wanted for her. She quickly put on the clean shift, one of finest lawn and trimmed with lace. She tied on a new pair of pockets, and then the maid laced her into stays, which she hadn't worn for years, but which encompassed her like a hug of conformity. These were pretty too, being covered in striped material and trimmed with lace. The stockings were plain, practical cotton, however, held on by simple garters of brown braid. Lastly, she put on something else she hadn't worn for years, cane hoops to hold out her skirt. She was changing, remembering. Embroidered silken skirts, floating and bobbing as she danced and flirted. A young girl so sure of her place in her world and her charms. She turned her mind to choosing between the three gowns laid out for her. One, of green, reminded her too much of Robin. A red one seemed too dramatic. She chose the gown of sky blue, with a thin white stripe. It seemed demure. She put on the white petticoat and then the gown, which was closed on top but open at the bottom. "Like the gown Robin bought for me." She shook that away and studied herself in the long mirror. At last she looked a lady, except for her hair. A clock somewhere chimed the half hour, and she started.
"I must go down. Shoes?"
Wherever her own were, they weren't suitable for this outfit.
Dining with Robin in my stockinged feet.
I think these slippers will fit, miss.
The maid offered backless shoes with a small heel, the front made of blue silk. Petra put her feet into them.
Yes, they do. Thank you. I will need a guide down to wherever the family is eating.
A footman's waiting outside, miss.
Oh, yes, thank you.
Petra checked her appearance again in the mirror and then realized she was delaying. She had to do one thing, wise or not. She had no time now to retrieve her evidence, but she hurried into the bedroom and pinned the cameo to the middle of the bodice for courage. A robin for courage. As likely as a butterfly. She remembered when he told her his name. Robin. She'd said, the small bird with the red breast. He'd said, cheerful and friendly. And continued with a challenge about having stood her friend. That was when he teased her about being his sparrow, the one who killed Cock Robin. That prediction had almost come true outside Folkestone. She'd make sure nothing like that happened again. She straightened her spine and left the room. A liveried footman stood there pretending to be a statue. For a moment, Petra couldn't think of magic words to animate him, but then she said, I'm ready. He inclined his head and set off. She followed, trying to revive the contessina Petra Daverio, who'd taken servants and fine clothing so for granted that she'd hardly been aware of them. She was led back down the grand staircase to the marble hall and across it to a door which the footman opened. He didn't announce her, so Petra still didn't know who the servants thought she was. She saw a relatively small room filled with a large number of people, and faltered. They'd all turned to look at her. She summoned the contessina and walked in to curtsy to the room. Lord Hrothgar was already coming to her, seeming warm and relaxed. He took her hand and presented her. A delightful addition to our family. My daughter Petra. Everyone smiled and welcomed her. Lord Bright said, Now you've shown us the picture, I can see why you didn't doubt, Bay.
Bay?
No one seemed shocked by her. But which was his wife? A brown-haired woman approached and kissed Petra's cheek.
My dear, this must be all quite alarming, but you are very welcome. I'm not sure I'm ready to be a stepmother, however, especially to someone only a little younger than I. I hope you'll call me Diana. Let me introduce you to the family.
Petra knew the kind stream of words was meant to soothe her, but she couldn't stop seeking hidden hostility and traps. For all the charming informality, Lady Hrothgar was a grand lady who would be well skilled in sugaring poison.
I believe you met Lord and Lady Bright.
Portia, said the smiling petite woman whom Petra had met in the garden.
And this is Lord and Lady Steen. Hilda is Hrothgar's sister.
Petra dipped a curtsy to a russet-haired woman and a brown-haired man who had none of the aura of the high aristocracy. Lady Steen, who seemed to be mending a child's stocking, said, Welcome to the madhouse, my dear.
Mad? Hilda?
Diana chided with a smile and led Petra on.
Lord and Lady Brand Malloran. Brand is another of Lord Hrothgar's brothers, and Rosa is my cousin. You'll see there are dark Mallorans and reddish ones.
Lord Bright and Lord Hrothgar being dark, and Lady Steen and this man being reddish. Petra smiled, but she felt shaken. Lord Brand didn't actually look much like Robin, but a well-formed face, loose burnished hair, and smiling blue eyes had been enough for a moment of shock and longing.
Hilda's correct, Rosa said. It takes time to adjust to the Mallorans.
She was plump and pretty, except for a sad scar down one cheek that distorted her face a little. It didn't seem to bother her, and her smile was warm.
"Doesn't it just?" said Portia. "With a Maloran—"
The women all completed it.
"All things are possible."
"But of course it's really Bay," Portia completed.
"Bay?" Petra wondered again.
"Petra is already a Maloran," Lord Hrothgar said with a mock frown, "and lives up to the motto, for she has made all things possible in coming here. Her adventures seem remarkable."
Petra thought perhaps Lord Steen groaned, but when she looked around, she could see only good humour and welcome. She risked a question.
"Bay?
Our names are all from before the conquest," her father said. "Being first, I received the name Beowulf."
"Sometimes I threaten to call him Wolf," his wife teased.
"I am not a predator."
"No," said Lord Bright, "but try denying that you're a potentate."
"Has it not served you all well? Ignore this irreverent lot," Lord Hrothgar said, and steered Petra toward a table. "I found a few more pictures."
Petra saw the miniature he'd shown her earlier, but also a painting about 18 inches high from the same period, and a skillful pencil sketch that was perhaps most true to life. It captured youthful self-assurance and a touch of haughtiness that went deeper, and a bright-eyed enthusiasm for life. There was more, however, a suggestion of powerful intelligence in the eyes and high forehead. No wonder her mother had been swept into insanity, as she herself had been by another magical young man.
"I too have a picture," she said, "but only of an eye."
"Ah, yes," he said with a rueful smile. "I had one in return. I have to confess to not knowing what became of it." Whereas her mother had treasured hers. Love was not always reciprocated, and she must remember that.
A footman entered to announce supper. Lord Hrothgar took Petra's hand to lead her from the room.
"We'll be delighted to hear your story as we eat, my dear. But if you wish to wait, simply say so."
"I'd be happy to tell you," Petra said to the room. "But you must tell me if you're bored."
"Impossible to imagine."
The dining room was of moderate size, which made her think there must be a grand one as well. Even so, it could have held twice their number. Lord Hrothgar seated her on his right hand, but she realized she made an uncomfortable ninth. Then an empty chair was taken by a middle-aged man.
"This is Mr. Carruthers, Petra," the Marquis said. "He's my invaluable secretary, and I'd only have to relate every detail to him later, especially if action is required."
Petra greeted the grey-haired man, but warily. Was this her father's Vartzi? The secretary smiled.
"And to think we were growing somewhat dull."
As her father had said, there were no servants in attendance. The cold food was spread on the table and a sideboard, and they served each other. Once they all had a cold soup, Petra was invited to tell her story. She began with Ludovico, admitting some folly, but not the whole of it. She told of her father's death and her removal to the convent.
"You were a nun?" Portia asked, astonished.
Petra tried to explain about the Sisters of St. Veronica, but these Protestants seemed mostly bemused.
"Is this your calling?"
Lord Hrothgar asked, and Petra sensed shielded regret.
"To be a nun?"
"No, sir, but I think I will always concern myself with the welfare of the poor. It is needed."
He nodded. "Go on." As cold pies and salads were passed around, she related her mother's illness and the frantic plans for escape. When she mentioned Lady Sodworth, she saw the same lack of recognition that Robin had shown. But then the Marquis said,
"Ah,
an ill-mannered couple. He's in trade, she's young and strident. Omniscient, groaned Lord Bright, adding to Petra. He does have that reputation. Petra sincerely hoped it was overrated. He's Bristol-based, but has been at court, her father said, as wry explanation of his knowledge. If Lady Sodworth helped you, Petra, she deserves our goodwill. With a sick feeling in her stomach, Petra remembered the encounter at Nouvion. What if Lord Hrothgar brought about a meeting? The woman would mention Robin Bonchurch of Derby. So many traps beneath her feet. That was a hypothetical danger, however, and one she could do nothing about. For now, she tried not to give her father reason to feel ill-will toward the Sodworths, and presented her fight with Mr. Cockcroft entirely because of Vartzi. Cockcroft, Lord Bright said. Can't think of anyone by that name. Nor can I, said Hrothgar. But if he was travelling post, with two servants, he must be of some wealth. Would you say he was a gentleman, Petra, or a rich merchant? Petra would have liked to make Robert Cockcroft a merchant, but she was sure it would trip her up later. A gentleman, I think. A nobleman? She hesitated. There was that old signet ring and his familiarity with important French families like the Guise, and he'd said he was highly born. But the nobility of any country knew one another, so that presented particular dangers. By way of answer, she said, he explained that in England a person could be a plain mister but highly born. True. So he gave that impression, did he? Cockcroft. A conundrum. What a treat for you, Bay, said his sister Hilda in a wry tone. To Petra, she added, he so delights in solving intricate puzzles. You could have brought him nothing better. Petra wanted to grip her head and scream. Perhaps he used a false name, Lord Brand said, entering the game. Being up to no good, Hrothgar speculated. Not necessarily. I know a few titled men who prefer to travel simply, the sort to find the fuss not worth the candle. Ashot's one, Huntersdown's another. Done it myself a time or two. Very well, we'll hold judgment on his identity and rank. Carry on, my dear. She was failing, but Petra told the rest of her adventures, careful of every word while trying to sound believable. The adventures at Mère Goulard's caused amazement and admiration, especially of her part.
You really are skilled with pistols and sword? Diana asked.
Slightly, Petra said. I'm grateful I didn't have to actually use them. After that, she skipped quickly to Boulogne.
These men seized you at an inn, Petra, Lady Steen said. How appalling!
It was terrifying, but I escaped. Don't mention Coquette, she thought. And Mr. Cockcroft found me. We went on board the ship he'd hired. Name? Lord Hrothgar asked.
I'm sorry?
Petra asked, staring. The name of the ship.
Oh,
she was flustered beyond invention here.
The Colis.
He nodded. The Curlew. He didn't say that the ship could be found, but she knew that was the fact, unless Robin had thought to bribe Captain Merrion to silence. She was making a mess of this, but couldn't find a better way. She proceeded to Folkestone and the smugglers, pretending not to know their names. Don't worry, her father said with a twinkle in his eye. We won't bring down the law on them. Petra smiled her thanks. I would like to reward them, for they were all kind. She couldn't mention Captain Rose, for even though that was surely a false name, it might lead directly to Robin. Sharing the address, the Black Swan Inn, Stoating, would be fatal.
She couldn't mention the fight, for these people might know about one of their own who'd been wounded recently. Trying to hide panic, she said, "Once we were out of Folkestone, our routes parted, for Mr. Cockcroft had urgent business in Cornwall. His mother is ill. He explained the coaches and such and gave me money for the journey. I had to walk at the end because it was Sunday." "An astonishing story, Petra," said Lord Steyne, with perhaps a hint of scepticism. "You are to be congratulated on your enterprise. Or, speaking as a father, to be chastised for impulsive folly," said Lord Hrothgar. Petra twitched, but he seemed to be teasing. "That's unfair, Bay," Portia said. "If Petra hadn't gone with this Cockcroft, the horrible Vartsy would have won." "My wife," said Lord Bright, "is somewhat impetuous herself." His wife swatted his arm. "And Petra managed to extricate herself when captured," Rosa said. "How brave of you." But Lord Hrothgar looked at Petra. "You said one of Vartz's men died in England." Petra went cold. "Had she?" "Yes, she had, earlier in the day." "Oh, did I miss that? He was watching the road out of Folkestone and tried to stop us, but one of the smugglers hit him over the head." "A very careless type of villain," Lord Brand remarked. "And a strange thing to forget," Lord Bright said. Petra knew she was red. "It happened so quickly. Maledizione. Mr. Cockcroft tried to fight him, but he was losing. It was lucky that the smuggler had a cudgel." "Very," said her father, showing no sign of doubting her. "I do hope to be able to find this Mr. Cockcroft and reward him." Petra wondered if she could believe that. There was something not quite true in the tone. "You must give Carruthers as much detail as you can, my dear, such as the gentleman's first name, perhaps." Of course he'd caught her slip. Striving for an innocent tone, Petra said, "Robert, I think." "Excellent. Now we must turn our attention to the unpleasant Signor Vartsy. He must be stopped." "Bay," said Rosa, "I know you don't read the lighter parts of the newspapers, but I could swear that in one of yesterday's I saw an advertisement that mentioned that name. I wasn't paying much attention, but the name struck me as odd. Someone offering a reward for news of the man, I think, with something about an attack." "A lesson to me to read every word," said Lord Hrothgar. "Carruthers?" The secretary was already leaving the room. "So who," asked the Marquis, "is seeking our villain?" "Cockcroft, I assume," said Lord Steyne flatly, in the manner of one cutting short a game. "Cockcroft," agreed the Marquis. "My dear Petra, it seems your protector didn't entirely abandon you." There was clear speculation in his eyes now. "He didn't abandon me at all," she said. "A sick mother must take precedence. I can't imagine why he'd take the time to do this." She could, though. She could. "Oh, Robin, faithful protector to the end, but you're ruining everything," she thought. "We'll deal with this Vartsy," said Lady Hrothgar, as if the man's arrest was unquestionable. "But we must also decide how to establish Petra in her new life with as little disturbance as possible." "I don't wish to be any trouble to you," Petra said. "Hrothgar feeds on trouble," Steyne said. "You may as well surrender." "Would you be willing to take my name?" the Marquis asked. Petra stared at him. "Become a Malloran?" "You are a Malloran, but if I present you to the world as Miss Petra Malloran, there will be no doubt as to my feelings on the matter. That also acknowledges the truth of your origins, which you may not like, but the resemblance between us is marked. Not so much now, of course, but there are enough people who remember my wild youth.
There is an alternative, Petra, said Diana. You could remain the Contessina Petra de Verio, and we would sponsor you into our world as friends of your family. She smiled. Whichever you choose, I doubt your name will remain unchanged for long.
Marriage? At the moment, Petra couldn't face the thought.
I'm not sure, she said. The truth is known in Milan, which means it will arrive here eventually. Not my father's identity, but that I am not the true child of Il Conte di Baldino. So my mother's reputation is lost in any case.
She fought tears. Lord Hrothgar said, It seems your brother has disowned you, but if you take my name, it will ensure he has no ability to disturb you ever again.
Petra inhaled. Then I choose to be Petra Malloran, sir. And I thank you.
You honour me, he said. Innocuous words, but Petra's eyes suddenly filled with tears at memories of Robin, of heaven and hell.
Oh, my dear!
Diana rushed over to embrace her and offer a handkerchief. Petra was saved from complete embarrassment by the secretary's return with a number of rather battered newspapers. We pass them to the servants' hall, her father explained, opening one and scanning it. Other family members were doing the same, simply pushing aside plates and wine glasses with no ceremony at all.
Here it is, Portia exclaimed. Reward for any information leading to the location of a Signor Varzi of Milan, lately come to London and suspected of involvement in a broad daylight attack on a gentleman in Kent. He is of middling height, round build, and with thin, greying hair.
I must say, he doesn't sound dangerous.
This is your terrible villain, Petra?
Yes, I assure you.
Portia shrugged. Information will be received and rewarded at Messrs. Grice and Hucklethwaite, Chancery Lane.
Excellent. Lord Hrothgar said.
He didn't say that tomorrow someone would be seeking information of Messrs. Grice and Hucklethwaite. It didn't need saying. But they were probably Robin's lawyers and would lead right to him.
Robin, I'm sorry. I tried, she thought.
Others have been finding the identical advertisement, which provided no new information. Lively speculation was interrupted by Diana saying, The masquerade at Channing's.
Oh, yes, said Portia.
Intriguing, said her father. Petra waited warily to be enlightened. Diana did so.
Bay's cousin, the Marquis of Ashet, has been feverishly refurbishing his family home. To celebrate completion, he's holding a Venetian masquerade.
When? 2 weeks or thereabouts.
I believe he has Mistress Cornalis arranging it for him, so it will be correct in every detail. She is Venetian, you see. She was an opera singer to begin with, but now hosts such events in London in the season.
Teresa Cornalis. Could things become more tangled?
The timing is perfect, Diana said. Just long enough for you to become comfortable with the family and English ways, but not so long that it will be difficult for you to avoid society's attention. If we can keep your arrival secret, the masquerade will be the perfect occasion to present you to the world.
And keeping secrets, said Lord Steen, is another of Hrothgar's talents.
Perhaps he wasn't as fond of his brother-in-law as the rest of the family.
And you can advise us, Petra, Portia said brightly. Have you attended a masquerade in Venice? Bay has, and Bright, but none of us ladies.
Yes, of course, Petra said, carefully not looking at her father.
It had been at a Venetian masquerade that he'd met her mother, and where she had been conceived.